The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Day. Hope you had a good week. Weekend tomorrow, and then we're going to do it again. But the news never stops. There is so much tension in the air now. Don't rule anything out. There are multiple flashpoints, and anything can happen. That has led a lot of people to begin to think seriously about going to their bolt holes, their hideouts. And believe me, there have been probably hundreds, if not thousands, of underground facilities built over the last 40, 50 years by the rich and the elite, who knew someday we were going to head into World War III, and they wanted a place to go. Underground, deep underground, with their NBC, nuclear, biological, chemical filtration systems. But who's going to guard the above side? That's the question. Who's going to guard those air shafts that they have to have? A lot of people, of course, have bought land, like Argentina, for a prime example. I remember years ago when I found out that Ted Turner had bought some enormous amount of land in Patagonia and was selling off pieces to his friends in show business and the entertainment community, and they have pieces down there. It is said that he has a plane essentially on standby, not to exaggerate it, but ready to go to get him out of here if things hit the fan. And it does look like they may. Now, the more extreme views on getting out of Dodge in time involve people who suggest that there are safe havens or alternative venues for the rich and famous and others on Mars. Could it be? Well, if you've looked at enough Mars videos, which are usually still pictures strung together in a YouTube format of Mars, you'll know very well that there are countless suggestions of a civilization that used to be, that has been destroyed. It was destroyed at one time. There are relics all over the place. That's not to say that there still aren't people living there underground. It's not to say that we aren't there in a human format and haven't been there really in any other case than probably 30, 40 years we've been there. It's really hard to know what the truth is, but the potentials are all there. And Frank Jacob is our guest for these first couple of hours tonight. He's a director, writer, producer, and has a movie, a film out. Now, it's got a wonderful title. I've seen the trailer. It's called Packing for Mars. Yeah, Packing for Mars. And the bottom line on that is that there are people on the UFO ET paranormal venue on the circuit who are stepping forward now and making it quite clear that we are on Mars. We've been on Mars for decades, perhaps, and there's a lot going on there. And when you think about the Mars rovers, how those solar panels keep getting cleaned, you kind of have to wonder, who's cleaning them? And it's not the wind. These things have been cleaned, and it's almost embarrassing. It's like somebody had Windex and paper towels. So let's say hello. He's over in Germany. He's up early. Frank Jape. Are you there, Frank?
How you doing, Jeff? I am.
I'm good. Oh, you sound very good. Are you on Skype?
No, I'm just on a regular smartphone with headphones hooked up.
That's a dandy phone you've got. Okay. Well, thanks for getting up.
German. You're welcome.
You had no choice.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Of course. Yeah. Our guest is Frank Jacob, and the movie is Packing for Mars. What I thought I'd do is, it's a short trailer. It's just a little over a minute. Let me play the trailer for all of you so you get an idea, and then we'll kind of step into this and see where it goes. It looks like an interesting storyline. So here we go with the trailer for Packing for Mars.
Space program, as most people understand it, is completely a front.
They don't want us to know.
There's a monolith.
They deliberately smudged certain things.
There's a whole nother reality going on out there.
There really is another cost of the human race, the breakaway civilization.
We're all coming forward with information and evidence that Alternative 3 is not some science fiction thing.
People go through their lives on autopilot all the time. You wake up, you make breakfast, you go off to work, you do your thing, you belong to the machine for 8 hours, you come home. But what people don't realize is that they need the truth.
And there it is, Packing for Mars. Great title, terrific music. But let me just ask you a quick question. Where'd the music come from for that?
The trailer music was actually something that, we specifically selected because of its just high energy. And when you're doing trailers, you know, it's a lot different. We tried making trailers based on the music in the film, but it's just a different vibe. And when you're doing a trailer, you know, I've worked at a network and cut hundreds of them, actually, and you really sort of need that energy to carry the pictures and to carry the voices, and that was just an ideal piece, and I was so happy that we found it.
Yeah, it fits hand in glove perfectly, absolutely. Now, you've been involved in filmmaking. You've won awards, international filmmaking. Is your permanent home in Germany, Frank?
Yes, it is, yes. Mm-hmm.
And
it's been there since a little over 10 years. Prior to that, I was in the United States, and I also grew up in Canada. And actually, I was thinking about it the other day. I've actually lived in four countries now, and it's interesting to get the different perspectives. But yeah, right now, home is over here in Bavaria, Germany.
Let me, if I may, step off the beaten path here for just a moment. You've been there 10 years. The refugee story, of course, is world-renowned as being generally very unpleasant. Can you give us a little bit on that, how you see it as a former American citizen, former Canadian citizen? What's it look like to you over there?
It's such an interesting topic. The funny thing is, I've talked to some of my German friends about this, and maybe it's just the Germans or whatever, but you know, they just have more of a, I mean, at least the ones that I've talked to, they just think it's overblown and they're making more of a big deal out of it than it really is.
Really?
Yeah. And it's like, you don't really see, I mean, aside from, there was a period of time last year when it hit a peak, and they actually, I remember I was I was on the usual roads that I travel on, and suddenly everything came to a grinding halt, and I stood there for an hour. And it was because essentially the Germans shut the border, and then everyone caught wind of why, and it was because literally suddenly there were thousands, hundreds of thousands of refugees coming into the country, and that will shut it down pretty much. And I think there's two sides of the pole. One is that people think, hey, it's not, when you think about it, Germany, a country of about 65, million people.
Right.
If they bring in, a million refugees, it's such a small amount that it really even doesn't really even make a dent. Now, on the other hand, there's others that really are freaking out, and they're saying, hey, this is this is unacceptable. And there's people. I mean, the thing is, it's hard to tell. Jeff, when you're living in a community, unless you really go out there and you hit a lot of areas, and interview a lot of people, you end up getting the sound bites that are thrown at you through the mainstream media.
Sure.
We all know how trustable that source of information is, right? So I think a lot of it is a matter of it's this ploy to kind of get us all worked up and get us all distracted. And whenever I see sort of an overblown emotional thing going on in the media, I ask myself, it's like the magician's trick. What's really going on that they're trying to hide right now so that they put these events out there in such a high-fused manner? So that's not to say that I don't think a country should have certain, it should absolutely have its sovereignty. But I think in a sort of progressive world, it would be great if a sovereign nation, were open-minded, but also not just brought people in, but, figured out ways to go to those countries and help the people on the ground, because I'm sure most of them would prefer to stay with their friends and relatives in their community where they grew up and not come to some strange country that hates them, So, yeah, anyway,
That's a very good answer.
Anyway.
Yeah, very good answer. The word over here is that the German media has been instructed without any qualification by the German government to play it down, not build it up, because it is a problem in many areas. We've all heard about the rapes and all that, and the idea that these immigrants, and tragically they have been, many of them, driven out of their countries, their homes. They've lost everything by Western interference in many respects. And yet they're coming into Germany and, let's just say, Sweden, for example, and getting basically enough government subsidization, that they never have to work again. And many of them haven't. And in Sweden, they say, why should we work? I've read too many stories about this. Sweden is in real trouble. I don't know about Germany, but are you picking up much in the media about Sweden, Frank?
It's funny. The thing is, you see the same stories coming out here that you see coming out over in the U.S. And, it just seems to me like it's uncanny how homogenized the news feed, the news cycle has become. It used to there'd be more independence in the press, even in the mainstream. You would think, I mean, there's different news stories coming in here, but now it's pretty much the same. And I really do think that the real story is not emerging. It's the real story has little to do with the refugees. I mean, it's sad that these refugees come here and then you hear stories and read stories about them, having bold assertions about how they're going to destroy the Germans. And, they're openly and publicly making statements under the protection of freedom of speech that are super provocative. And there's part of everyone, I think, that makes you kind of reach inside and go, wow, if I could do something about that, that guy should be deported immediately. And you have to question, the inner voices that come up that force you, if you're a progressive and enlightened person, an awakened person, it's amazing how quickly you can resort to sort of negative and dark thoughts about what to do with the situation. But I think the deeper problem is something completely different. And, that's always what interests, me and us as filmmakers, is try and
that's the right approach. You've got to look behind the curtain at the bigger picture, and you're doing that. And I would not disagree with you. There is an agenda here, and it's not necessarily what little we are picking up in the media, because what's being picked up is so repetitive and so duplicated Over here, we have a joke that they just, each major newscast often has the same basic stories in their lineup. And I was 12 years a television news director and anchorman, and I can tell you that even at the local level, you get the same kind of thing. It's, as you say, a homogenized product, and it is. So we're not, we don't have that viable media that we used to think we had. Journalism over here is, you know, you're reading press releases and you're duplicating what you're supposed to do. And if you don't play ball, a lot of people can get tossed out the door because there are 10,000 waiting for every job. It's that crazy. Everybody wants to be a celebrity. And what's the quickest way to do that? Become a TV news gal or guy. And then you're right there.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, we have to, I think, open ourselves up to the reality that we've been part of a social engineering project for at least well over 100 years now. And, you know, starting with like places like the Carnegie Endowment for Peace, which is kind of an interesting name, considering what they were behind doing, and the Rand Corporation. Yeah. All these things are there to essentially steer and engineer society.
Tavistock.
They would like us to go. Yeah, Tavistock, exactly.
That's probably the granddaddy or one of them. Anyway, okay, very good. Packing for Mars. I packed up a couple of weeks ago. I'm still waiting for the taxi to come get me. I went out of here, like a lot of other people. I'd like to go away for a while and get a good perspective on how life can be. What brought you to this project, Frank? Is it obviously a very unique one? Great title.
Thank you. You know, it goes back quite a few years, actually, to a time when I was interested in sort of nutritional things and healing with foods. And there was this one biodynamic farmer we used to go to pick up seeds and things. And he was sort of a philosopher and very, very emotional guy and very, very smart, you know, sort of a pillar of his community. And one time we were over there, he, after talking about, you know, whatever, supplements and stuff, he suddenly sort of goes off the deep end and starts talking about this book called Alternative 3.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, you know, was based on a television program that came out in 1977, and the book was follow-up to it. And that the book, you know, and the television show were essentially sci-fi, which is masking reality. And he was going on and on about it. He was so passionate about it. And he gave me a copy of the book. And I'm like, okay, this is cool. I took the book with me and I read it. And it's just a page turner. It was written by Leslie Watkins, who's a Fleet Street reporter in London. Very well written. And, you know, and from that point on, I just thought, okay, this story about Mars, you know, it's the idea that essentially they decided, this think tank of elite people in the 70s already had pretty much done studies and had looked at the world situation with respect to climate and politics and war and things, and they pretty much written it off and said, we're doomed, and we have to figure out a way to save at least some amount of the human population. And they started thinking of alternatives, and hence the title Alternative 3. They started off with Alternatives 1 and 2, which had to do with cleaning up population reduction. Alternative 2 was to go underground into huge cities, which they ironically at that time didn't think was very conceivable. And then the alternative that they ended up choosing was to go off-world, Alternative 3, and the nearest planet to us would be, of course, that would possibly be habitable for humans, was Mars. And then the story sort of goes that there's this think tank going on deep under the Arctic pole between Russia and America, and they essentially are building the stages toward moving and colonizing the planet, first by going to the moon, and from the moon launching to go to Mars. And it's just quite a fascinating concept, you know, in retrospect now. But then, you know, essentially I took the book, and years went by, and I never thought I was going to make a film about it. And I thought, hey, neat idea, cool story, but, you know, I don't know, something thought I thought may be true about it, but you don't really think you're going to be making a film about colonization on Mars.
Uh-huh.
Then years went by, and I'd gone through different, you know, stages of my life, and as a musician and a writer, and I was working at a network, and I was looking for a project to get my hands, you know, into something that kind of allow me to put together all the different sort of areas of creativity that I've developed over the years. And and I wanted to make sort of a feature documentary. It had to be something really cool and interesting to watch, to listen to. And I was looking for a story. And one night I was listening to a broadcast, and I came across people talking about going to Mars. And it was a woman calling herself Laura Eisenhower, the great granddaughter of President Dwight D. Eisenhower. And
sure.
That got me to sit up and pay attention, because you don't really, normally you hear a lot of people say that, you know, a lot of whistleblowers come out and make claims.
Uh-huh.
But when it's someone of like, of the pedigree of Laura Eisenhower, you kind of go, okay, this it all brought it back at that point. I'm like, is this really true? Is there really a colony going on? And so I decided at that point, now there, you know, the whole book and everything came back, and I thought, this is the storyline. I think that this would be a cool storyline to go after, like to follow this storyline into the modern day and find out if there's really something to this story, and to kind of put it in a modern context, because now like nearly 40 years had gone by since Leslie Watkins had written the book. And so that's kind of how it started. I made a pact. I said, all right, if I get in touch with Laura, within 24 hours, it'll be a sign from the universe that I should, you know, go grab a backpack and a camera, hit the road and get the story. And that's pretty much how it happened. Laura actually got back to me. And it just led down a whole rabbit hole of information, of people and characters and all kinds of stuff.
How interesting. Yeah, well, certainly she's well-known in the community, and has done many conferences. I have not had her on the program. I don't know her, but I've read a lot about her. This Leslie Watkins is an interesting figure. Now, you met him. You got to meet him.
I met him, via video conference.
But yeah, I understand.
Exactly. Yes, I finally did that. You know, we had no idea that I didn't even know he was still alive. I'd read somewhere that he'd ended up in New Zealand, and I pretty much, you know, didn't think anything about it. I just I was inspired by his book, and now the film isn't exactly like a verbatim translation of the book, but it's got bleed through and crossover, and we, of course, you know, we examined the program Alternative 3 in terms of the modern cultural and interest in scientific context throughout mm-hmm. the film. But it was really cool because really like within days of us finishing and releasing the film, we were contacted by his son, Graham Watkins. And Graham basically told us that Leslie was alive and well in New Zealand, and we promptly invited both of them to check out the film. And they were just amazed, and they were so excited that, you know, that we'd made the film. And it formed kind of an interesting new alliance, because it turns out that really 15 days after the date that we released Packing for Mars, Leslie Watkins and his son re-released Alternative 3 as the first time really in 40 years.
Wow.
So it was an amazing synchronicity mm-hmm. that we had never counted on. And then that led, of course, to my finally, you know, after all these years to setting it up with Leslie and finally getting to ask him all those cool questions that you want to, knowing, you know, that he was involved in this monumental story, which is kind of like the English version of War of the Worlds.
Got it. Very good. Stand by, Frank. We have to pause for just a
sure.
couple minutes, and we will be right back. Jacob, now let me go back to when you met Leslie. The people that write breakthrough books, visionary books, paradigm-shifting books, new concept books, are often thought of by many of us as having connectivity with the powers that be, or certainly with some agenda-oriented people who are doing things that we just don't we're not exposed to, we're not given that chance. Did you have any feeling about him, where he got this inspiration? Did he talk to you about that?
Well, I actually called him out on it. I said to him, you know, come on, Leslie, tell me, level with me. Are you an instrument of communication, you know, by powers that be?
Yeah.
And he actually cracked up because he thought that was funny. He denied it. He's somebody who was very skeptical. He saw that program, Alternative 3, and he rarely watched television, he told me. And he was shocked by it because it sort of coincided with a lot of things that he kind of had been feeling about the space program and things that didn't add up in his world. And when his publisher approached him with the idea of taking that story further and researching it much further, he went into it that way. And he told me that essentially what he found were, he seemed to be getting close to something because he found his phones were being tapped. He was being followed.
Uh-huh.
And I think that there's something that we learned, you know, like Tanya Maidenford, who's the producer of Packing for Mars with me, you know, the two of us were on this kind of like Scully and Mulder trip for all of this. And during the process of making Packing for Mars, we made another film called Solar Revolution. And in that film, we learned from scientists that essentially there's this potential, Michael Persinger, this brain neuroscientist that we met, told us about the magnetosphere of the Earth being like a giant cloud of information. It actually stores all of the thinking and all of the resonance coming out of our brains and collects it, and it's there kind of for eternity, kind of like the best way I've ever been explained, the Akashic Records, if you're familiar with that Indian
culture. Oh, sure. Yeah, of course.
Right? So it's real. There really is this sort of
information. Yeah, let me ask you to pause on that, because that's a very interesting concept. We have now, of course, in the world of the Internet, the cloud. You store everything in the cloud. Well, the magnetosphere or magnetosphere, either way, is potentially this enormous, I don't want to say hard drive because that's really old technology now, but it's an enormous reservoir of all things human that have gone on here. Is that what you're suggesting? That's what he's suggesting.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. That's what he's suggesting, and it's actually backed up by a lot of emerging science.
How interesting.
Since we started that film, we've connected with a whole group of scientists over here in Europe that are really tripping out into the field of consciousness and resonance and how information is being passed to and from us, that we're actually, you know, affected by the magnetosphere in and around us. And so it was no surprise then to me when I was talking to Leslie, because he was talking about getting these inspirations when he was writing the book, that I felt, you know, they may be able to, the elitists or whatever you want to call them, they may be able to hide it and manipulate it in the three-dimensional world. But there is this other dimension we've learned now, scientifically proven, that stores this information, and we are actually able to tap into that information and pull down things that are actually real. Like, just like the way remote viewers, if you've heard of that concept, can project themselves to remote locations. And even the CIA was, you know, we covered this in the film, you know, as well, that
they're
actually interested in remote viewing locations, not just on the Earth, but also on Mars.
Right, I know most of the viewers from Stargate, and
exactly.
We've talked all about that. It's fascinating. So
totally,
this is the magnetosphere could be correlated to the common idea of a collective unconscious.
Yes.
So there it is.
Yes, I think, you know, we basically build our reality from these, you know, originally from our 3D experiences.
Uh-huh.
But when we're born for the first 3 or 4 years of our lives, our brain is literally swimming in a substance which it produces called dimethyltryptamine, and it's basically a very high potent hallucinogen, which research has now shown. If you look at the research of Rick Strassman, who was probably one of the only clinically documented studies that actually had a large control group of people who were injecting DMT to find out what happened. And these people under this influence of dimethyltryptamine were actually traveling to other dimensions and meeting with other beings. And there was an overlap. It wasn't just like some LSD trip where people were hallucinating things. No, these were concrete experiences that were shared and overlapped amongst many people from a diverse, spectrum, from doctors to lawyers to regular people.
This is something that all children up to the age of 4 or 5, this substance is in their brain fluid. And they're basically, you're talking about the magic of childhood, where fantasies come true and all of that. So in many ways, maybe these kids who are fantasizing, we've just explained the reason why and how they can do it.
Well, I mean, I don't know if I have, but I think that would certainly be a good place to look and to think about in terms
of that's very interesting.
And it's, the thing is that it starts to starts to wane, because the pineal gland is the gland in the human brain that regulates.
That's the master, that takes over, yeah.
Exactly, and eventually it wanes, and we get more into serotonin and melatonin and other types of also very potent, state-inducing drugs that the brain will produce. But dimethyltryptamine becomes less and less a part of that, and as that happens, we get more into the 3D world, and then eventually, we're locked in and we're sucked in, and our egos begin to take over, and
we become, for
a good time, for a good long time, and many of us never leave that sort of ego.
Yeah, the beginning of the end, unfortunately.
Yes, you could maybe look at it that way, or maybe it's the need to evolve into the extreme area of that level of consciousness.
Well, we turn within, Frank, and as soon as we turn within and think we got it figured out, we're out of it. So that's the trip.
Exactly.
It's very interesting. Some suggest that, let's just call them, the big them, the globalists, whatever, the elite, the dark ones, the light ones, whatever. There's a war on the pineal gland and keeping people from understanding how it works, what its potentials are. And it does apparently slowly lose its vivacity over time. And there are some people who are now trying to renovate, regenerate, and revitalize their pineal glands, thinking that there's something going on there.
Yes, I think the pineal gland is going to become, and this whole area of research is going to emerge in society as being much more talked about and much more investigated and researched.
Well,
because it really is tied to our next level of evolution. That's one thing we learned from making these films, is we learned that we actually are standing at this precipice of where we need to make a quantum leap. Because essentially, when you look at history over the last even 1,000 years, the human mind and the human desires and motivations have really not changed all that much. All that's really changed is we've gotten smarter, we've gotten access to technology through various means, and so we've incorporated that technology into that same state of consciousness that's been dominant in our society, and that state of consciousness is no longer bringing us where we need to go. And I think there's already the early people, the early adopters, whatever you want to call them, people that sense this, that are talking about it, that are pushing this frontier. And this is where we're headed, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that going on. And there definitely is this, it seems, a very, very strong move on behalf of certain controlling elements in society to make sure that that doesn't happen. It's like this last great conflict that's happening around us, and we're seeing it. It's just unbelievable what's going on. I mean, the times we're living in are just unbelievable. Just what's happened in the last half a year has just been stunning.
Exactly.
And it's all an example of this sort of coming to a head of something where we really need to make this evolutionary leap. Now, I personally didn't think, I have to concede somewhat of a cynic, once I started to awaken Because, you know, if you listen to the average street conversation out there, you realize that you really are amongst the very, very few people out there.
However, can you not be cynical? I call it realistic, Frank, but it's
Right.
It's sad.
And then, when we met with, Dieter Burrs and we started doing the films like Solar Revolution, we realized that actually there is an influence which is non-voluntary, which is something that can actually, this is coming directly from the center of the galaxy right now, registered by NASA, which is influencing our DNA, and it's causing a resonance to take place, which is really freaking a lot of people out. It's just, some people are finding themselves totally inspired and in tune, and other people are finding that everything is just kind of breaking up for them. And this includes systems, and systems are falling apart and breaking up. And the Maya talked about it. And there's, and in the films, we talk about all the different, ways that this was being prophesized or projected, and what is the science behind whether it's really happening. And so my, one great hope is that actually it is an involuntary evolution that's taking place. And when Tanya and I make films like we do, we're just trying to kind of help push that envelope so people can find the information out there, because a lot of the information out there is contaminated. A lot of it is filtered, a lot of films come out and, in the mainstream that are funded by millions and millions of dollars and have huge marketing campaigns. And they're giving people a taste of something, but it's not real truth, So it's really, we see it as our role to kind of put out material that's unfiltered, that we found without an agenda, that's just looking at it open-mindedly and saying, hey, let's follow this road a little further and see where it takes us. And who's all out there? So, it's a scientific journey. It's a cultural journey. There's all kinds of traps and pitfalls out there, but it's interesting to kind of go through them, document them, and put them out there for people to kind of analyze together with us. And it's like, because we're all this like evolving experiment out there.
Well, indeed. Yeah, we do, and it is, and you're 100% right. The sad thing is, when I watch over here, I don't know how it is in Germany, but the so-called dumbing down, which is being accomplished in varying degrees of success, some extraordinary, by the so-called education system, where people are not only intellectually being dumbed down, but they're being rewired to be no longer proactive seekers in life. They're being programmed to be drooling, reactive consumers. And that's what they are. And the IQ, I think, is disintegrating. They're certainly not living as long as their parents were. They're clearly far more uneducated than their parents were and their grandparents were. That's inarguable. And I don't know where it's going to go. But when this quantum leap is presented to people, I think a lot of them will not be able to take it, even if it, if it is presented to them. I don't think they'll be able to take the bull by the horns and be proactive enough to do anything. It's sad. You look in their eyes, you've seen it even over there. You look in people's eyes and they're 25 and 30 and they look like they're done. They've done it all. It's over. There's no more lust for life.
Yeah, you're right. The film opens up with kind of a breakdown of all those things going on around us in the world, that there's active, programs out there to get people vaccinated. There's technology like HARP and vibrational technology, which is used to trigger certain frequencies within those chemicals that are being placed into our bodies.
Exactly.
There's chemtrails being sprayed over the skies. These are all things that people thought are wacky, crazy conspiracy theories, but as the days go by, one by one, it's all being shown to be not a conspiracy theory at all, but actually, it may be a conspiracy, but it's not a theory.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. It's tragically.
No, it is true. Yeah. This is going on. People, I think, that's one of the first realizations that I think people have to come to. If they want to be able to accept some of the crazier premises, like the ones we're putting out in Packing for Mars, it's definitely a walk down the rabbit hole, and a lot of people just can't go there because it forces them to have to change a lot about their perception of the world around them, which we also talk about in the film, because there's essentially a term, a psychological term for this. It's called cognitive dissonance.
Sure.
And that's when people are confronted with information which is it totally contradicts their worldview, but it's true. And the problem is that people have is that when all the people, all their friends and family and colleagues and education around them tell them the contrary to the truth, it's so uncomfortable for them to accept the truth that they much rather would just stay in the lie. And what we're seeing around us, of course, is this perpetual lie, which is happening in the world, you know. And I think we have to make the brave leap at whatever risk, you know, because without risk, there's really no gain in society, and venture down some of these roads of discomfort to find the truth.
Well said. It's kind of a sad situation to survey, honestly, because a lot of people, I think, are essentially kind of, they've been wired to fail. It is a lie. There's so much lying and disinformation now. You mentioned some of the things that we have to deal with as a species, from chemtrails, GMO foods. My God, the newest vaccines now are actually taking attenuated virus and putting it into someone, and that attenuated virus will invade a cell, carrying with it new genetic material, which takes up residence on the chromosomes in the cell, and it proliferates throughout the body. So it's synthetic DNA that people are being injected with, which purportedly causes the immune system to construct the antibodies needed to target that specific virus or bacteria. Well, that was the first Gardasil, was a DNA-oriented vaccine. Now they're doing it all the time. They're getting away from attenuated viruses, and they're just going to put the viruses, oh, they'll be dead or weakened either way, but they will deliver to the cells new genetic material, which is synthetic. And we know damn well if they can do that and tell us that they can cause the human body to create antibodies for any virus that they want or bacteria, they can also use that DNA to cause the human body to do anything they want.
Right.
So that's a big issue.
Isn't it?
Oh, that's vaccines.
That is a big issue.
Oh, my God.
I mean, the thing is, it's just, you know, vaccine is a really hot topic.
Go ahead, Frank. No, go ahead.
Wasn't it amazing to watch what happened at the Tribeca Film Festival last year, you know, when that vaxxed film was being selected by Robert De Niro? It was just so incredible to watch this massive, perfectly orchestrated media machine like Goliath just jump on this little film festival and just clobber the heck out of it.
Yes.
And it wasn't just in New York. It was everywhere. It was here in Germany. It was in Europe. It was just like all of a sudden the monster came out of sleeping and said, whoa, wait a minute. You know, we can't have this even being discussed. And so this is going on. I mean, you have to identify it. You know, you have to identify these things, because essentially it's the last stand. You know, we have to make a decision. Do we buy into this fabricated, synthetic, controlled experiment around us that we call society and accept it? Or do we realize that there's actually something deeply wrong about it, and feel that it's deeply wrong, and actually begin to look at the fact that there could be more to this story of a breakaway civilization, of a group of elite people that are fabricating this world for them?
We're going to get to the film particulars in our next hour. But you've just, again, put your finger on something that I've talked about for many, many years. And the average person who comes out of the mill here, they mill people and reproduce them, the average reactive person cannot make the decision to become proactively involved with life and question things that you just elucidated upon. It's just not in them anymore. They've taken that away. And I don't know how to restore it except by doing what I do, and you do what you do, and that's present reality. I don't even like to use the word truth anymore, Frank, because it's so perverted and corrupted now. But reality,
totally.
as much as we can. And what is reality? When you have a whole culture that is now being lied to by its government constantly, and therefore it lies to itself. People, I'm being lied to. It doesn't matter if I lie. So everyone lies. Everybody lies now all the time, and there's no compunction about it. When I was a little kid, when you were taught, if you told a little white lie, you carried that around as guilt. You didn't do well with that. You know, you didn't cry and weep, but you certainly, you know, I lied. That wasn't good. Now, people lie, no problem at all. It just flows out of them. Now, when you begin to live in a world full of lies, then conspiracy theories, which in many ways, of course, are conspiracy fact, are no longer so easy to identify for people. It becomes harder for them. And they're stressed out, they're anxious, they're in debt, they're nutritionally deprived, they're being pelted by the things you mentioned and other things we haven't even mentioned. But it's tough, and I just don't know where it's going to go. I don't know how to turn it around. When you look at the cell phone tower network, I call it the cell phone grid in this country. We know damn good and well that can be used to electromagnetically EMF, control and influence and socially engineer and rewire and hardwire and influence and threaten and actually imbue almost every major emotion that human beings somehow expose as beings that are supposedly sentient. It's all a control thing now. It's electronic. We are electrical first and chemical second. And whatever they can put together that's electromagnetic, they can distribute it easily, even over the electric grid. Doesn't have to be cell phone towers. And now we're headed toward nanoparticulate dust, smart dust, which people will inhale, and that will literally begin to reprogram them. So we face a formidable challenge here.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And it sounds kind of scary when you're sort of phrasing it all like that. And it can be very daunting to think about this, but I think we also always should keep
gotta identify the problem.
Right. We need to sometimes maybe it's just part of our human evolution to go down the ultimate path of darkness first. And you know, scary as it may sound, and all these things you're talking about are really happening out there. And you know, I've started watching them. I started realizing something was crazy when I was 12 years old. I read. I mail ordered a book about Hiroshima, you know, the dropping of the bomb. And at that point in my life, I just was so shocked, you know, as like you were saying, you know, back when truth was important and things like that. I was very influenced by this book, and it really made me realize that, hey, I'm just landing on a planet of insane political leaders. Who would ever drop this kind of power and destroy
exactly
that many
what human being
and exactly yeah. And it started I think roughly around that time. It's like it seems like there's been this negative influx that is unnatural, I would say, if I may, you know, just kind of posit that that isn't a normal human type evolution, because humans' evolution is not just the evolution of the body and of the brain, but more and more we're learning that the heart, which has its own brain, incidentally, that communicates with the brain.
Yes, it does.
Is an actual compass and something that we can rely upon to grow and learn and evolve as human beings. And it's much understated and really very little researched how powerful and the heart will be in the future of human evolution. And, you know, the heart is one of those things that is a very nebulous concept, especially considering the coming on of AI and the whole movement, the transhumanist movement, which is rapidly emerging on us. The idea that we're going to, you know, transcend this lame body we have that's sick and has disease, which of course is being created by the same people who are trying to create this artificial existence. Mm. And we need to transcend that, you know, and go into these machines. And you know, the concept of getting to another place from here, it's very enticing, and it's very powerful for people who have the means to do it.
Totally inspirational. Yeah. We have to pause on that note, Frank. We'll come right back talking with Frank Jacob, and we'll talk about the film Packing for Mars and much more in just a few minutes. Hang on.